Hi, thank you for coming. I'm Jerry Marshall. I suppose I'd see myself, I came across this term called kingdom entrepreneur and thought, that's it, that's what I am. I like the idea of being a kingdom entrepreneur. And to me, that covers the whole kind of spectrum from church planting through to setting up a social enterprise through to setting up a commercial company. But my commercial company, technology company, was actually made accountable to our church leaders because we considered it to be part of the kingdom of God. And so that seemed to be a sort of good general overall label. And I came across this organization, TBN, in 2004 at New Wine, and I thought, that's what I've already been doing. I really kind of related to it and joined, and then had an opportunity 2 years ago to move back from my businesses and to run it. And this is my dream job. It's kind of entrepreneurship and development. So it's manic sometimes, but it's great fun. And what I want to do is to just talk about some of the stuff we do and some, I think, inspiring examples of the way businesses are being used to alleviate poverty, and give some case studies, and then introduce Chris, who has, can I say, just come out of a very senior position in Summerfield and exploring a number of avenues. And Chris lives locally and is heading up the local TBN group called a TBG, Transformational Business Group, and has been to one of the projects, at least one of the projects, and so he's going to talk a bit about that and about what's happening locally, if that's okay. So let me just start by, I'm not going to spend lots of time talking about world poverty because I'm kind of working on the basis that you understand there is a problem and there are some extreme there is extreme poverty in the world, and it's an issue that we as Christians, I think, need to be dealing with or involved in. And I don't think I need to go back to biblical justifications for that. So Chris and I have just been to an excellent cafe, and it was, I think it must have been £2.25, Chris pays, I don't know, for a cup of coffee. And I didn't really think about it, and for many people, that's more than they would earn each day. And aid, I know sometimes I get into dangerous water here, aid is not the answer. This is a graph which shows the increase in aid in Africa and the falling GDP per capita, or growth in GDP per capita. There isn't a lot of correlation, a lot of positive correlation, quite a strong negative correlation. That's not to say that we think that aid is completely pointless. I think there is a role for aid. Clearly in emergency situations. And I think also an analogy I sometimes use is aid is good for, say, building a school. It's relatively easy to get the capital to do something like that. The problem is often how do you run the school? Because either there needs to be enough tax going through the government for the government to pay for the running costs, or there needs to be enough wealth in the community to pay the fees that the school needs to charge to exist. It's actually quite difficult for an aid organisation to keep a school going year after year after year. We believe, coming from where we are, that the solution is in creating wealth through enterprise, encouraging ethical businesses that bring employment and dignity and independence. And in particular, the SME sector, which is the kind of missing middle in most developing countries. So these graphs show contribution to, on the left-hand side, contribution to GDP by different sectors. So the one on the far left, the red sector is the SME sector, half of contribution to GDP, and on the other graph, 65% share of employment. But in developing countries, that's very small, only 10% and 33% of employment. It's an underrepresented group, and it has enormous power to generate wealth, to generate jobs, but also to do all kinds of other things, to increase competition, to stimulate competition, to stimulate entrepreneurship. There are lots of benefits of focusing on that sector. There's a multiple impact, and here's one. I'm not sure exactly where the figures, how they were calculated, but there's a multiplier effect if you can impact the small and medium enterprise area in developing countries. Because if you create wealth in one area, they go and spend the money in shops, which creates wealth, and on you go. There is, just going back to that, there's a lot of talk, of course, about microfinance. And microfinance has a role. It's said that it's very good at getting people out of abject poverty to normal poverty. We have some involvement in microfinance in the Kibera slum, for example, in Nairobi, and there are some really impressive entrepreneurs who are getting loans for, you know, I think the maximum was £200. Incredibly impressive, but it is quite difficult to get them to move from that informal sector, so it's outside any registered business or tax or whatever, to a formal business that starts employing people. And interestingly, in Nairobi, we also have a fund which has 262, at the last count, SME clients, small and medium enterprises, employing between 3 and 10 people. None of them could actually get money from banks because they don't have the collateral that the banks are looking for to get a loan, and they don't have the money to get the collateral to get the loan, and so on. There's that vicious circle. But the impact of those 260 growing companies is significant. So here's our vision. You'll not be surprised that we believe business can bring personal and social transformation. Our aim is to create jobs. And we're a network, essentially a network of business and professional people wanting to support and encourage local entrepreneurs. So it's a hand up rather than a handout. We're Christian-based, responding to the biblical mandate to care for the poor and needy. But we also work with people from any or no faith. And we're a network, so we've got different people doing different things for different reasons. What do we actually get involved in? Here are some of the things. And what I'm going to do is just run through some of these things with a sort of example project, because that will give you a much better idea of what we do than anything else. So here's one. This is business training. We've got a really good program that one of our members, a group of our members, put together for basic business training. Two teams of four people went out to Uganda, and a year later, 200 businesses had been created as a result of their training of entrepreneurs, potential entrepreneurs, and training trainers, one of whom has now trained hundreds of, about hundreds, but certainly dozens of other people. And that's had an impact in Uganda, and then they thought, we'll try it in Mongolia to see if it works on a different continent, and it was equally effective, and it's spreading to other areas. So encouraging people to set up their own small business, really basic concepts, you know, why would people buy what I want to make, and who are the competition, and so on. Here's a different example, someone setting up a business. This is a guy called Andy Tanswell, who came up with a very low-cost solar power device. That's the thing that the girl is wearing, the one with the orange shirt. That is a solar power device which can charge up a very robust LED light, which replaces kerosene in off-grid Africa. Kerosene is expensive and it's polluting and it's dangerous. I've seen so many burnt kids. It will also charge out your mobile phone, which is a key development aid across Africa, and your radio. And that's been distributed through village entrepreneurs. So an entrepreneur gets the kit in a partnership with a microfinance organization, so microfinance does come into it. They then can sell and rent these products, which can save up to $100 a year for a villager that's currently using kerosene. Currently looking for 1,000 village entrepreneurs in Madagascar, hopes to be tying up a deal with the Microfinance Institute to be looking for about 50 or 60,000 in Kenya. Then there's initiating business. Maybe it's a subtle difference, but if you take my example on the right, TeamStart. TeamStart's a program which develops high-growth, technology-based businesses. I initiated that in Palestine, and there's an additional link in that it includes links to Israeli companies, so there's a kind of post-conflict, if we can call it that, elements to it. And in fact, I'm back there tomorrow doing some further training, tomorrow night, and all of next week. And all I did was, I've been banging on about, we ought to have TeamStart in Palestine. I've been banging on about that for 3 years, and eventually a pot of money came up, and I had the plan ready to go, brought some people over to the UK, trained them up, sent them off, and they've run a couple of programs this year. They've just started a few days ago at the third program. It's gone slightly off track, and so I'm coming in to see if I can fix some stuff. As opposed to Andy Tanswell, the previous slide, who actually set up and is running, it's his full-time job. I just have the satisfaction of initiating it. Everyone else is doing the work, which is terrific. The other example is rather more substantial. Kim Chan, who's one of our trustees, he's there at the opening of the Kazuku lodges with Desmond Tutu. He has connections in South Africa, and basically bought up 22 farms in an impoverished part of South Africa, you know, as you do, did a deal with the South African Games Parks to set up a game park, organised the fencing and all the rest of it, did a deal with Legacy Hotels to build the hotels. So we've now got this malaria-free games park that you can visit, and it said that every 10 tourists create one job, and there's a pile of social work around all of that. We're also particularly involved in supporting and mentoring businesses. This is one. This village on the left is an abandoned mining town. They used to mine asbestos there. You can probably guess why it was abandoned. And the whole place was just abandoned. But great buildings, great resources. It's been bought by some Christians who are redeveloping the whole area. There are a number of businesses. Forestry business employs about 300. That's the top right. There's a company lodge, what used to be the company lodge, which is where all the executives went and stayed. And this is a beautiful area. It's like the Lake District. 4,000 feet up, great climate. So there's a tourism business. There's also water and honey, a couple of thousand hives. And the focus is actually on orphan care, because Swaziland has the highest rate of HIV at 41% and life expectancy of 31. And so that's the focus, caring for orphans and leadership training. Really good school there, supported by these businesses. Here's another example, a small business that is providing IT training and assistance for people, for example, to create CVs properly on a computer and submit them. But instead of going to the middle class areas where perhaps there might be more money, they have their outlets in the townships around Cape Town. Another area that some people get involved in is investment. John Maguire is an interesting guy, an investment banker, who decided he ought to do something about poverty, and someone said Malawi was poor, so he headed out to Malawi, thought agriculture was a bit inefficient, so he bought a couple of farms. You don't have to buy a farm to be a member of TBN. I mean, it helps, but bought a couple of farms, treble production, thought this is good, went to the market using his skills, raised 10 million in a closed fund to invest in a further 6 farms. He now has not only 8 farms, but more importantly, 6,000 outgrowers in smallholder clubs of 20 farmers with a lead farmer, area supervisor on a bicycle, manager on a motorcycle, focusing on import substitution of staple crops, which developmentally is important, some cash crops, paprika and bird's eye chili, which generate about $1,000 a year for the subsistence farmer, and all that multiplier effect on top of that, and getting a reasonable return for investors because it's investing in land. So there's a real win-win there. How long would it take to raise that 10 million through donations? So much more effective to do it this way. And he now has presidential level invitations to 6 other countries. And Margaret runs a wig manufacturing business and a sort of beauty shop in Nairobi. She's one of the 262 clients of the Fusion Fund. Some of it's on a much smaller scale. This is Anne Horobin, who imports handmade cards from Rwanda and townships in South Africa. We managed to get someone called Nick Strong to stand up at the front of our Members' Day holding a banana to illustrate that they're made out of bananas or in some way connected with bananas. So why, just to finish off, why would people like me and Chris get involved in this stuff? Well, here's a personal answer. I've kind of two hats. I've got the TBN staff hat and my TBN member hat, because I'm still a member. And when I go off to Palestine next week, it's as a member, and also to Kazakhstan immediately after that. It's sort of with my member's hat on. So one is it makes a difference. Husni is one of the clients of the microcredit fund in Kibera. She sends her kids to a boarding school, so they get off Kibera, off the slum, million people, no sanitation. So really breaking the cycle of poverty, it makes a difference. Secondly, fulfillment. Here are a pile of people from Bethlehem University, final year students at the Catholic University there that I was training in marketing as we set up a business process offshoring company. Great people to work with. I was a bit worried about getting them to do role plays and, you know, mixing up genders and all that kind of thing, but they were so up for it. It was incredibly fulfilling to spend some time with them. And also, it's adventure, going to Kazakhstan. That'll be adventure. That's new for me. This is another tough business meeting in Tel Aviv with Israelis and Palestinians, actually in the middle of the Lebanon War in 2006. You can see we had a tough time. And I have had such amazing experiences, both challenging ones, you know, walking around rubbish dumps in slum areas, to completely surreal ones, like being on a posh yacht in a lake near Stockholm, surrounded by Israeli and Palestinian business people, funded by the Swedish NIR, the sort of Chamber of Commerce people. And you think, what am I doing here to do with alleviating poverty and all these people with their bow ties serving you dinner? It's quite an experience, but I think as a result we're making a big difference. Why should anyone join TBN and be involved in it? What do TBN members get? Expo trips, exposure trips, taking people out to see what the issues are and to see and to meet people and see how they can get involved. Now that may sound rather inefficient use of cash to go out to a country and do that, but that's where the passion comes from. You go to a country, you see that stuff, and the rest of your life is changed because you want to get involved. We have local groups like the one in Bristol and personal contact with me and others to help people get involved. And then we provide practical support and encouragement, access to various resources like those. That business training material is available copyright free on our website. The Team Start material is copyright free on our website. We can provide mentoring. We've got a loan fund through members. And even little things like business cards. Sometimes it's useful to have a sort of NGO status. So as a TBN partner, you can have a card that says TBN partner. It's helpful in some contexts. And some companies, so we have a corporate membership, and there are various ways that companies can link up to mutual benefits. So for example, there's one not far from here that produces showering equipment. They're linked to a project called Touch Nature in Nepal that produces handmade soap and candles. And this company in the UK gives these products away as a thank you gift to customers when they've had their shower and wet room stuff installed, and they're also doing some mentoring, and some of the staff are raising funds for this and that. The project in Nepal works with women who are single women in difficulties, to summarise it. So that, I hope, gives you an overview of what TBN is about. And now I'm going to hand over to Chris, who will pick up from that in some way.
My name's Chris Agito. Just to give you a little bit of a flavour of who I am. Until very recently, I was part of the senior management team at Summerfield, getting involved in all sorts of things like mergers and acquisitions, developing a property strategy, basic hard-nosed business stuff that seems very remote from TBN. I was part of the team that sold the company to the co-op, led the integration of the property department, and convinced them that that was a good time for them to make me redundant and for me to pursue other things. So here I am with a bit more time on my hands exploring what happens next. It's great in as much as it gives me a bit of time to focus on getting the Bristol element of the TBN up and running and, you know, firing on all cylinders and trying to inject a bit of momentum into that. So that's me in a nutshell. I've got a couple of kids, married, actually attend this church on a regular basis, and that's me. Firstly, the Hagar Project. Coming back to what Jerry was saying about expos being the place where you get a passion for some of the work of TBN, some of the, you know, trying to make a difference for people in the developing world. A couple of years ago, I went on an expo with some of the guys, Jerry being one of them. He happened to be on that one. And we went to Cambodia. Your friend Jill was there as well. So it was one of those experiences that I would describe as life-changing, but at the time wasn't quite sure in what way it was going to be life-changing. And to be honest, probably still not quite sure how it was life-changing, but come on to that in a minute. Hagar is an organization based in Cambodia that kind of sprang up from a guy that went over there as a missionary and saw that there were lots of women that had been people trafficked, that were, you know, in brothels or suffering from domestic violence, and needed some kind of support, and, you know, needed a framework to improve their lives. So they set up this organisation that was about actually rescuing them, providing safe houses, and, you know, providing them with rehabilitation, with healthcare, providing their kids with education. And, you know, just being a fantastic NGO. But part of the rehabilitation, they decided it was very important to enable these women to become economic contributors, to kind of build up that self-worth where they became people that could enter into the workforce, have meaningful jobs, and could, you know, put something back in, and you know, this idea of, you know, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where it's moving them up that level. So once they'd, you know, helped them with the rehabilitation and dealt with some of the really immediate needs, they were looking to take them on to the next level, help them towards the self-actualization, whatever you want to call it, that idea of giving something back. And as part of that, they set up a couple of businesses. At the time, they set up a soya business, so producing soya milk and selling it. I think at the very start, they were just producing it and selling it by the jugful, and they gradually progressed, turned it into a pretty big commercial setup. They had a factory where they had equipment donated by Nestle's and all sorts of things like that. It was quite a big outfit. They also had a textiles business, so they were producing all sorts of things, bags and attire and all sorts. And the other one was a catering company. So they set up a catering company. They were supplying the US embassy and all sorts of things. So it turned into quite a big outfit. The guy that heads up the NGO is also the Swiss ambassador to Cambodia. So, you know, there's a lot of credibility in the work that they're doing over there. And it's really exciting stuff. For me, I went out there on this expo, you know, expecting to see all of this business stuff and, you know, finding ways to, you know, add value and, you know, maybe offer a bit of consulting while I was there. And there was a little bit of that, but I guess the real value in it was just getting in there and seeing things on a grassroots level and, you know, seeing what was going on in a place like Cambodia. I, you know, had a sheltered life and never been to the developing world before, so it was a little bit of an alien concept. You know, you see it on the telly, but until you've actually been there and experienced it, then I think it's difficult to feel passionate about these things. Some great stories from the Hagar initiatives. There's one guy, a guy called Hans, who had been a production manager over in Switzerland, actually, in a big textiles company, producing all kinds of things for Gucci and Prada and, you know, some really big names. He was, you know, high up in the field, and he retired, was enjoying his retirement in Spain, had his feet up, enjoying the sun, getting bored out of his head. Met up with the guy that was leading Hagar, and Pierre said to him, well, why don't you come over and have a look? Next thing he knows, he's uprooting his wife, and off they go to Cambodia. And this guy was leading their textiles business. Took it from being their biggest loss-making venture to actually the biggest contributor to the business while he was leading it. Another story, similar story, a guy from Australia that was leading one of their big catering companies. I don't think it was Compass, but it was one of the big catering companies in Australia, as one of their ops directors. And he had just got there while we were there. He'd been there maybe a couple of months, and he was just getting established in catering and turning things around. It's a great example of people with skills that they've kind of honed in the developing world, have become top of their game, real leaders in their field, and decided actually, you know, how can we put something back in, and headed over there, and we're making a real difference to that NGO. Thing about Cambodia, I guess, is you'll have all heard the history of Cambodia, the 30 or so years ago, all the atrocities that were going on there. It left them with a big vacuum, you know. So where I've had the privilege of going to business school over here and learning from some great business leaders at business school, in Cambodia, there's no one to teach in those business schools. There's not that experience to be passed on through the generations. So they're very reliant on external support. And I guess that's one of the things that TBN do very well. Mike, who's one of the founder members, is that right, Jerry? One of the founder members of TBN. He's actually in Cambodia at the moment, helping them with some kind of business strategy work and some working through some structural issues as a consultant, whereas an NGO wouldn't necessarily be able to afford to pay for your mainstream consultants to come in and support them. But actually, TBN is able to support Mike, and off he goes, and he's doing some great stuff, helping them develop where they go next with the initiative. I guess one thing to stress is that with TBN, we try and work with organisations that are serious about being commercial as well, looking to have really sustainable businesses, rather than businesses that are heavily reliant on things going on externally, you know, so support from the West. And one of the good things about the organisations is that they tend to listen. We're almost as brutal as some of the people on the Dragon's Den. You know, if the business doesn't look like it's going to be commercially viable and hence sustainable, I mean, that's the driver. It's not because they want to make a massive profit. It's because they want to know that these businesses are sustainable. Then it's unlikely that TBN are going to want to support them. You know, there are lots of organisations that do want to support on that basis. The gap that TBN is really trying to fill, Jerry will correct me if I'm wrong here, the gap we're really trying to fill is supporting those people with a really genuine, sustainable business plan and providing some skills or some investment or whatever's required to actually make that happen, just to catalyse it and make it happen. So, Hagar was a fantastic expo. If you get the opportunity to go on an expo trip, then I thoroughly recommend them. A lot of fun, really eye-opening, and get to meet some great people. And it's probably the best way to get connected into TBN, because you get to get a feel for what they're doing on the ground. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
In terms of what we're doing in Bristol, I guess that's the pressing one for you guys. We're at very embryonic stages. We've had a couple of gatherings, pulled together people through the TBN network, through my own network, and various hangers-on that have connected through Jerry or through Mike or whoever. Had a couple of meetings. We've got about 12 to 15 people involved so far. All kinds of people. We've got HR specialists. We've got a finance director. We've got a couple of financial advisors. We've got people from telecoms companies. It's a real mixture. Lots of ideas being kicked around about what we might want to do as a group, you know, going off in all kinds of tangents. And that's great. What we've tried to do then with our second session was to try and consolidate and work out, actually, what are we going to focus on? Because, you know, you can kind of just send a lot of things out there, waste a lot of time, and it's sometimes much better to have a focal point. So what we've decided that we're going to really kind of hang ourselves around is one of the guys has got a lot of links into Burundi. Yeah, he's got some links with the churches there. He's already seeded a few microfinance projects. There's a lot of need in a couple of these townships in Burundi, and we're going to get behind him. So we're going to support him with the, you know, finding other opportunities for microfinance, but also trying to move them to the next level as well. Trying to spot entrepreneurs in Burundi that, you know, are doing an okay job in microfinance, but need a little bit of a boost or a bit of a mentoring program to get them to the next level, where they become, rather than just entrepreneurs, they become employers, and we get to this SME kind of status. It's that middle ground that Jerry was mentioning earlier. There's a big gap. So Burundi's one area of focus that we're going to get behind. We've got another guy who's a bit of a serial entrepreneur. He's, you know, ideas left, right, and centre. He's done seed projects before. One kind of semi-crazy idea was that he's filled a container with junk, basically. One of these big shipping containers, filled it with junk, and shipped it out to Ghana. That's what he did. And you know, basically gave the shipping container full of junk to a local entrepreneur who went through it, recycled it, found uses for a lot of this junk that we would, you know, just bung into landfill. But, you know, there's that kind of creative spirit, you know, what's the term? Something about necessity and ingenuity. Anyway, you know,
necessity's not an
adventure. That'll do, yeah, that's a good one. But, yeah, in Ghana, you know, the guys on the ground found all of these different uses, were able to sell a lot of this so-called junk and make use of it, and it seeded a small business there, whereby the entrepreneur then said, well, you know, I've made this money with this, I want to buy some more junk so I can sell it on. And, you know, it's a great business model. It's dead easy to seed. And so we're looking at, you know, how we might expand that a bit further, possibly with the link into Burundi again, and trying to tie things up a little bit so that it gives us a bit of focus. But there's that there's all sorts of other ideas sloshing around as well. So we've got the trying to support Burundi, trying to support this entrepreneur that's, you know, got these various seed projects that he's got a tried and tested model but needs a bit of support in kind of upscaling what he's doing. And finally, because there are all these crazy ideas sloshing around, we thought it would be a good idea to have a bit of a think tank and, you know, create an environment where we're enabling people to come up with more ideas and get them off the ground. So there's one guy who's a management consultant. He's really, you know, behind that and wants to explore that and potentially doing some of this think tank business out there in somewhere with need. I'm guessing it'll probably be Burundi, you know, following a little bit of a theme there. But that's the sort of thing that we're up to. That's the sort of thing that we're focusing in on. We're trying to keep it quite informal and network-based rather than, you know, enforcing, you know, this is our vision, this is what we're going to do. So there are other people there that have got their projects and they're sharing things with us, and it's a great kind of support network. But those are the three things that we're probably focusing in on, if that makes sense. And that's where we are. Like I said, we're at a very embryonic stage, so we're looking to try and gather a bit of momentum, and I'm in a lucky position. I've got a bit of time to try and inject that momentum. So
maybe I'd just say, if you want more information, I've got some brochures and business cards and so on. Do talk to me or drop me an email.